This podcast is part of the Game and Entertainment Network. Visit tgenetwork.net to find the latest episodes from all our shows.
Welcome to the Pixels and Dice Podcast, a show by gamers, for gamers. We cover everything from Mario to Munchkin, role-playing to retro games, and everything in between. Now, without further ado, let's get on with the show.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back to the show. I'm Scormus.
And I'm Baelis.
And today, want to get off of Guild Wars 2, because I think we've kicked that particular topic into the dirt quite a bit lately. Instead, thought maybe we would talk a little bit about some tabletop role-playing news.
Cool. What's up?
Well, it's a little bit of old news, but it's not that old. And it's something that really got me thinking. White Wolf. They've always been kind of innovators for the last, 25 years at least, when it comes to tabletop role-playing. I mean, especially with their World of Darkness, you know, Vampire the Masquerade, Werewolf
the Apocalypse,
Mage, Changeling, all those great games. They're all tied together, but they're all unique. And they really kind of changed the face of role-playing in that they really brought LARPing into it as well. I mean, they're really closely tied with the Mind's Eye Theater content for their LARPing in the same world. So, yeah, they've got kind of a unique player base, unique fan base, and that's why they've continued to do quite well over the years. But recently, they came out with something that really, I think, is going to change the game completely for tabletop role-playing in general. And that's the Storyteller's Vault.
Okay.
Now, Storyteller's Vault at storytellersvault.com is kind of a unique service. When you look at it, it's just, well, it kind of looks like a White Wolf-centric version of DriveThruRPG. Which, if you've gone to DriveThruRPG before, it's basically a website where you can buy role-playing games. Either digital versions, or you can order hard copies on a lot of their games and whatnot. And it's a great place to get good deals. So, when I first heard about this, I was like, oh, okay, well, White Wolf decided to do their own version of that. Fine. Whatever. And they have. To a large degree, that's what this is. You can buy all kinds of their books, digital or hard copy, through this service. But that's not what makes it so innovative. Nope. The Storyteller's Vault does one thing that, as far as I know, nobody else does. They brought non-canonical homebrew to the actual publishing world. By that I mean, if I go out and I've created my own setting, let's say I did Portland by Night, wrote up a book about Portland, Oregon, and how it, from the vampire point of view, and, completely detailed it out, just like any of their other cities that they've done books for. Before, that would just be my use. I could have wrote it up and handed it out to friends, used it for my own gaming purposes, but that's it.
Yeah, because if you had tried to sell it, they would have come down on you like a hammer.
Right. Now, they allow me to go, okay, not only can I, provide it for people to use, I can go to Storyteller's Vault and use the same type of graphics that they use for their books. I can get artwork. I can get all the fonts and everything and basically take what I've written, make it look like any other actual honest to God vampire book, and provide it for people to download as a digital book. Now, sure, it's marked with, you know, Storyteller's Vault. It's non-canonical, but it allows people to easily not only just spread their homebrew creations, be it fiction or, you know, source books, city books, that sort of thing, core rule books, whatever. But they not only can then make it look real, you know, like any other book in the series, you can sell them.
Yeah, but you have to sell it through them.
Yes, but that's something. If I were to go and spend all this time and make this great, let's say, you know, Portland by Night, right? And I go and create this great book, but I'm stuck because I can't do anything with it. Now I can make it look professional, provide it up there through them, sell it for, let's say, $8-$10, right? I get 50% of that. Now you're going to say, oh, well, you know, that doesn't seem over. You did all the work. Yes, but I'm making money on something I normally couldn't have before. And better yet, it's a way to let people in the industry see what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
If you're, you know, a talented game designer, I'm not saying I am, but if you were, you can go out, you can create this stuff, maybe like make a little money off of it, but also get your name out there. Because you can go, and when you apply to go work for Wizards of the Coast or something like that, you can then go, look, this is something I've got. And it's not officially published, but it kind of is. Kind of, sort of. It's still considered.
It's recognized.
Yeah, it's homebrew, but look at what I did just with these art assets and my own writing. Hire me. It's a way to build a resume for, you know, up-and-coming game developers. But what really has me excited about this, you know, besides the capabilities there and how it helps the homebrew community, is that this seems like the wave of the future for smart role-playing companies. I think in our, the pre-recording discussion we had, you mentioned that there's really no reason why, say, Wizards of the Coast wouldn't jump on board this idea.
Because you know how many D&D-related books and
modules
people have been cranking out stuff for decades?
Mm-hmm.
None of it has seen the light of day because it's all homebrew. Now you got a place where you can take that old module that you created that everybody loved, dust it off, go through their assets to make it look decent, make it look, you know, professional, and then sell it.
Well, in theory, if Wizards of the Coast were to do this, then that would provide that option. And you're right. I don't see why they wouldn't do it, because here's the thing.
You're crazy not to.
It's a way to monetize all that homebrew. I mean, let's just say Call of Cthulhu, for example. Chaosium, you know, they can only do so much. They can provide, you know, so many source books a year. They can do a new update to the game every, you know, few years. And it kind of gets old. People go, God, I got to buy another edition of the game? I just bought the last one a few years ago, and nobody wants to go and do that again and again and again. But if they're able to get their homebrew fans, all that content that people make at home, and the good stuff, you know, get it published on their own site, And they're able to monetize that. Sure, they're not making as much as they would for a regular book, but they didn't have to do any of the work. They provide the art assets, the fonts, and whatnot. And they, I'm sure, edit or, you know, give it a look over to make sure it's, you know, reasonable and worthwhile.
Well, it's not going to get them sued either.
Right. And then they're like, okay, if we make $5 off this for every download, that's still $5 for a download that they weren't making before.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they're giving $5 on a $10 book to that other guy or girl who created it.
But maybe that person will come up with more stuff for them to sell so they can make more money and generate interest in the game.
So it's a, let's say we're talking a $10 adventure. You know, it's a like a mega adventure or something like that. Or even a source book, whatever. So that's $10. The company gets $5 that they weren't getting before. This guy gets, or girl, gets $5 for it. On every single purchase. $10 books, yeah, it's a digital file, but if you found a good non-canonical source book, and you heard good things about it, wouldn't you drop $10 on a digital file?
Probably.
And so would thousands of other people, because $10? What's $10? Most people are going to go, that's nothing. Or, you know, whatever. And the point is, that's all money. It's pure freaking profit to the company. And yeah, maybe they're helping a new up-and-coming game developer get started, and maybe they watch that person and they go, you know what, that guy's produced 3 good books. Let's give him a call, see if he wants to work in-house for us. We have a need. It's an amazingly great idea. I don't know why anybody hasn't thought of this before. I've never seen anything like this before, and it is freaking amazing.
Probably too much legal involved.
Well, why? I mean,
If you've got assets that are owned by, it's kind of like they're not sure who has the rights to it, either the artist or the company.
Well, in this case, the company made sure that these are all their in-house assets.
Right. But so, that's just it. You'd have to go through and make sure before you release something as, you know, you can use this as an asset.
Sure.
Because, hey, say you used a character name, and they didn't quite have the rights to that name, and then they get sued.
I don't know if you could copyright a character name, though.
If it was a character from a book that they didn't own?
Yeah, but that's why you have to have people that, you know, edit, go through and search, you know, check it out to make sure, but...
Again,
not a huge amount
of work. Are they willing to go
through
that work? Maybe, maybe not.
Maybe no one was before, but if this turns out to be a success, and seems to be, it hasn't been open that long, but it seems to be jumping right out there. I don't see why anybody wouldn't be jumping all over this.
I would love to see it. I would love to see it. So, you know, maybe other people would jump in, like, you know, Cyberpunk and Shadowrun.
Oh, yeah. And Shadowrun desperately needs something like this.
Well, that's just it. There are so many games out there that have huge followings that, you know, they don't get to produce, to do their own stuff. And another thing that might happen is, say you've got this Game A. Game A is loved by people, but they can't get past these broken rules.
Yeah.
And the instead of fixing those rules, the game manufacturer decided, let's put out this edition of it now instead. And we changed all the rules so we don't have to worry about that now.
Fourth edition D&D.
Exactly. But I'm trying to be PC here.
Uh-huh.
Somebody goes through and says, you know, I've always hated those rules, and revamps them, repackages it, and puts it out there. you could have something along the lines of Pathfinder that, you know, for a different game.
Yeah. But, of course, this is all non-canonical.
Who cares?
But
how many people playing these games gives two shits whether it's canon or not? Do you give a damn if Elminster is exactly how the game gives it to you? So you now this great wizard has a completely different name and is, you know, actually somebody you'd want to hang out with.
Okay. I can see that.
Who cares? If it's, you know, this guy or this guy.
Fans just want good fun. And if they can find somebody's old homebrew rules put out as a non-canonical source book that they can get digitally for 5, 10, 15 bucks, whatever.
I don't know. I like their spell point system for D&D instead of the way D&D does it, where you have spell slots.
Yeah.
You have to memorize your spells every day.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, you suddenly find yourself in a situation where every spell you've learned is useless.
That always struck me as weird because, okay, I'm this great and powerful wizard, and we had a battle, I've blown through all my spells, suddenly I don't know how to cast magic anymore.
Oh no, you can cast your Ray of Frost spell.
Yeah. That's not the point. I know they do it for class balance, but a wizard should be able to cast all their spells at will. If it turns out that you want to go to a thing where it's exhausting, kind of like you have with the Fate system in the Dresden Files, where you push yourself too much for casting, you can do whatever you want, but if you cast a little too hard, you put too much power into it, you're going to kind of pass out. That's a lot more realistic. But anyway, we're getting off point. Actually, we're not. Because
these are things that could be addressed through this.
Yeah. Let's say we make a source book for the magic system in D&D. If D&D, if Wizards of the Coast were to do something like this, like Storyteller's Vault. And we create it where you can have, you know, wizards that always can cast their spells, but it's based off of stamina, essentially. If you cast too much magic too often or too fast, you put too much power into your magic, well, it's not that you don't know, you have the knowledge, you can certainly try, but you might harm yourself by doing so.
Well, and that's why I liked our spell point system, because say you're able to cast a 6th level spell. But instead of wasting that 6th level spell, it's more convenient for your character to do 6 first level spells or 2 third level spells. You're still using the same amount of energy, but you're getting more use out of it.
Right.
And you don't have to be locked into, at level 6, I have this spell. Yes, it's a form of like a death spell. But I'm fighting undead, and it doesn't work against undead.
Mm-hmm.
So this 6th level spell that I've got all ready to go is useless. But 2 fireballs? 2 fireballs would be hella useful.
Yep.
You know?
Torch them zombies.
Or having the ability to cast invisibility to undead 6 times. Might even be more helpful.
True enough. Because then you can do the whole party.
So, yeah. The spell slot system, I understand. It's archaic. Needs to go.
Anyway, one thing I noticed about the Storyteller's Vault, getting back onto that,
yes,
is that if I read it right, I haven't found it here on the website, again, storytellersvault.com. From what I understand, it's not tied into the most, you know, the newest version of the game, which I guess they're working on 5th edition Vampire, but, you know, I guess the 4th edition be out right now, whatever. Doesn't matter. If I've written some homebrew source book or city book or whatever for 1st edition Vampire, let's say I was a total fanboy for 1st edition, which I was. Mm-hmm. 2nd edition, still my favorite. But, okay, 2nd edition. Loved me some 2nd edition. I mm-hmm. thought that was a great rule set. Let's say that that's what my group has been. We didn't buy 3rd or 4th edition. We stuck with 2nd for years. And that's what we've written all of our stuff around. We can now gussy it up with all their images and everything and make it look all good and sell them as 2nd edition source books and city books for other people that are like, you know what, 2nd edition was freaking awesome. Hey, look, there's new stuff. I don't care if it's non-canonical. I can buy this stuff to support the game I'm playing.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of the most recent edition. This makes it opens everything up, makes all these old books. You know, you've seen my shelf of books back there. All those old books I got that we are never going to use again.
Probably not.
Makes all those settings, all those old editions useful again.
Mm-hmm.
If I can go in here, find their 2nd edition stuff and go, you know what? Let's break out that old World of Darkness stuff. Let's go play us some 2nd edition.
I got something that I could guarantee you have a huge amount of information that could be added to it.
What's that?
Star Wars.
Oh, yeah. Now, that gets a little dicey now with Disney and all mm-hmm. that. That actually would be one thing where you're not going to see it happen.
Probably not.
Because any game that is a licensed property, you get real dicey about people making fan fiction for it and whatnot, especially if they're going to be making money off of it. Yeah, I don't see that happening. Although it would be cool, because,
mm-hmm.
man, we did a lot of stuff with Star Wars. Although, more, we used Star Wars 2nd Edition Revised and Enhanced more as a basis
mm-hmm.
for just an open science fiction setting, kind of space opera, but I tied in a lot of different stuff from various additional sources, let's say, mm-hmm. when I was running that. And that just made it more interesting to me. But, yeah, because, you know, Jedi get old. Anyway. But, yeah, this could be, other than for licensed stuff, it can be used pretty much everywhere. Now, you have something along these lines with Pathfinder. As I understand it, the Pathfinder, what do they call that? Pathfinder Society is, you know, you have all these different people that are members of that, and their individual games help shape where the storyline for the Pathfinder Society goes. It's not exactly this, but at least, if I understand it right, their home games do have some way of affecting the overall society. You know, the way the whole storyline goes.
Yeah.
Not completely, but there's something there. This is about 10 steps further along, though. And, like I said, it's just absolutely fantastic. I'm sitting here just scrolling through the main page. And, well, you can tell there's a lot of European fans of Vampire that are just all over this puppy. Look at this. This is for Vampire 20th Edition. Fiends and Foes, Ready-Made Antagonists. $5.
Hmm?
Now, that person, if this is actually, yep, it's Storyteller's Vault, that person's only making a couple bucks off of it. And the company's only making a couple bucks.
But if he sells 1,000 of them,
that's $2,500. Minus taxes, of course. But what, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Point is, this is exactly the sort of thing that somebody playing V20 would really love. Because, boom, yeah, how many times have you gone, hey, you know, I got to throw together an adventure for the weekend, but I've got no ideas. Hey, look, I can just flip through this book and here's some great characters, pre-built, great things, you know, bad guys and whatnot that can just spark your imagination. It's non-canonical. Who gives a fuck? It helps you get your adventure rolling. And for $5, anybody would buy this. I don't even have V20 as far as I know. And this would be the sort of thing I would buy.
Yeah. Game masters never get dry. They just don't run out of ideas. Never.
Never happens. But, you know, and this is perfect. It's literally exactly what people would be asking for. I mean, you've got some things that are only $1.
Some are free.
$1.95. Some are free. And that's fine. But it's all right there. It's not expensive. It's easy for anybody to get their hands on. See, I'm going to click on just, let's go look at Werewolf the Apocalypse. That was our game we played the most. And you've got the hottest Werewolf the Apocalypse, newest titles in this section. And here you're going to find a bunch of stuff probably for, no, this is actually a lot of stuff for, actually, it doesn't seem like they've got really anything going on with, you know what? Actually, they may not have even opened it up for, Werewolf yet. I thought they had.
Doesn't look like it.
You know, I'm not seeing anything in here, but then again, maybe there isn't just a whole lot of people, a whole lot of stuff being made.
Oh, I'm sure there is. It's just not available yet.
Yeah.
Because I know Vampire was the most popular one they had, but Werewolf was right behind it.
Right. But, okay, anyway, let's go on to Vampire the Masquerade. Okay? You've got your Vampire the Masquerade, you got your Dark Ages, Victorian Age, Kindred of the East, all this right there, ready to go. Easy to find pretty much anything you want. You can pick your product type. Say, let's look at resources for Storyteller Vault creators. Okay? You can pay what you want for a 2 portraits pack. Or you've got, Vampire the Masquerade Storyteller's Vault Style Guide, which is free. It allows you to, it tells you everything you need to know to make all that stuff. And I guess that's all there is. But that's fine. There's still bunches and bunches. You can choose which edition you want to go to. First, second, third, fourth. Which I guess is also 20th anniversary. Let's see if there's anything made for first edition. Yeah, actually, looks like somebody made Contagion, the Berlin Chronicles. $10. So let's say someone's playing first edition. Bam! Here's basically a city book for Berlin. Somebody wanting to, you know, maybe their characters have to travel to Europe. Bam! You've got a pre-built book telling you It's actually an updated look at Berlin by Night. And it makes it a modern day setting. So that's just freaking awesome. And I'm rambling on and on about this, but
no, you don't do that.
I'm sorry, to be honest, I don't know why nobody else has done this before.
Change is bad.
Yeah. But change had to come, and now change has. And once again, White Wolf has proven they're one of the most innovative companies in the industry.
So what you're saying is, Wizards of the Coast, get off the stick.
Not just Wizards of the Coast.
Well,
Chaosium. Palladium's never going to do it.
Palladium's...
Yeah, but man, oh, can you imagine the homebrew from Rift?
I know.
Oh my god. It would just drive CMBA to nuts to see all that homebrew come out and just tear his rules apart.
That would be nice.
Yeah. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But I'd love to see some stuff for Steve Jackson games, like Innominy, come out. I mean, there's so many... And this is another thing. There's so many games out there that just don't get the support that they should. Maybe they don't even get any future support at all. But if someone like a company like Steve Jackson Games goes, hey, we're going to let you, you know, bring in your non-canonical stuff. You'll get 50% of the proceeds. Here's some assets to get you started. Boom. And let the homebrew community start supporting those games again. And it's all free money for those companies. I'm telling you, this has to be the way things go in the future. If it
more than likely will, unless somebody screws up, a lawsuit ensues, and the company gets financially hurt because of it.
Yeah.
Then they'll get burned. They'll just, and it just, that's it. It's done.
Yeah, I don't know.
And everybody else will cower in their little holes and they won't even try it.
I'm pretty sure that White Wolf's going to cover their bases pretty well on that.
Well, you'd think so, but then we've also had high hopes with other things that they'd been involved in and they just completely screwed the pooch on.
True enough. Anyway. So, once again, we're over time. So, do you have anything else on this?
Nope.
Okay. Till next time, I'm Scormus.
And I'm Bayless.
Generic catchphrase ending.
Thanks for listening to the Pixels and Dice podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please check out our other content at gamingstuff.website. We have articles, videos, and lots more to enjoy there. So until next time, generic catchphrase ending.